Hey there, I am your host, Mandy Trapp, and you are listening to the Waking Up Human podcast, a podcast dedicated to exploring the complexities of the human experience. From the biggest questions of existence to the smallest moments of daily life, it's here that we will dive into the depths of what it means to be alive and to be conscious. Join us as we explore the many facets of being human, from the science of the mind and the body to the art of living a meaningful life. And so whether you consider yourself a philosopher, a scientist, or just a curious person looking for some deeper understanding, I know you'll find something here to enjoy in this podcast. So sit back, relax, and let's wake up together. Hey there, and welcome back to another episode of the Waking Up Human podcast. I am, as always, your host, Mandy Trapp, and I'm very excited because sitting right next to me today is my husband, John Trapp. So I've asked him to come onto this podcast, and I'll be completely honest, we did not do any pre-work. We wrote nothing down. There's no plan, except that he had asked me maybe an hour ago or so. He's like, what are we talking about? So here's the idea that I had. And hi, John, you're here right now. I'll give this to you in a second. You're actually going to realize just really how bossy I am with a microphone now that my husband is here. But I add a little bit, and I don't like this word in the spiritual world, download. I had to download. All my girlfriends laugh at me when I say that, but I'll just call it a spark of insight or of inspiration. And maybe even if you're listening to this right now, there was something in the descriptor that grabbed you and this is you, right? So there was an intuition that this just might be exactly what you needed to hear today, or in the very least, you'll get a few little golden nuggets and pass this along to somebody else. But the title that I saw was this. It just simply said in big, bold lettering, "Till death do us part." Till death do us part. Now, I'm staring at you, John. We have been married for 21 years, 22, almost, no, 21, almost 22.
22 in the fall.
22 in the fall. Okay.
23 minus 2001.
Okay. Nice try.
I'm ahead of the game. I'm building the anticipation for our anniversary this fall.
He's looking into the future right now. If we make it. Oh. And we'll talk today if we're going to make it. Nobody knows if we're going to make it.
Find out over the next.
And I'm laughing. There's for sure going to be some laughs, but also maybe a few tears in this one as well, because I think in our 21 years of marriage, and we've been together for a few more years than that, there have been several deaths. And I really want to talk about what death is. I think I talk a lot about death on this podcast. Yeah.
Morbid.
But really all of these personal deaths that we have. So when this was my idea in the bigger picture of everything, till death do us part, I think a lot of people took that very literally. Right. And it's like, nope, you know, until, you know, one person at least is on one side of the earth, that this marriage has to last until that point in time, regardless of any pain, any misery, any suffering, anything else that can ever happen. But what I want to really talk about and to explore with John, but then also pose some beautiful questions to all of you, in maybe you're in a marriage, in a primary relationship or some version of a marriage, or sometimes even in our relationship with our parents or with our children. And we get this idea in our heads that it's till death do us part. And we really muscle our way through something that just simply doesn't suit these new rebirths and these new reinventions that we're going through individually. And I think where this is really loud for both John and I right now is that there has been another death. And I would love, John, for you to share a little bit of what your current death is, because when we have a personal death, it immediately impacts the relationship, the whole dynamic of how we relate to each other changes. And then I'm going to share something with John that's been on not just my mind, but on my heart a lot over the last month that he doesn't know, aha, that I saved till this point. That's a huge death for me. And within that, of course, there's some major tugging and pulling on our relationship, but there's also a huge opportunity. So beyond our conversation today is that John and I are going to share with you really some of the tools, and I don't even want to call them tricks because it hasn't, I mean, yes, it's felt tricky, but some of the tools that John and I lean into when there is so much change that's happening in our lives that is actually, I think, brought us so much closer rather than driven us further and further apart over the years. And our relationship constantly gets to feel new, right? Which is really exciting, but it just doesn't happen with the ease and grace oftentimes that we want it to. It can be really difficult. So I'm going to welcome you here, John, right now, and you can say what you need to say. I mean, you're your own person. You can do that. But if you don't mind, then just kind of leaning into the current death that you're experiencing.
Okay. Wow. You have me intrigued. And not only the audience, but it's interesting being the guest and also being curious and intrigued and also in admiration. I enjoy watching you set up this conversation and just being in it. I did get adequately scolded for not having listened to enough of your podcasts. And that must be very frustrating for you because I listen to podcasts all the time. So
I got so mad at him yesterday. You've heard that podcast. He's like, no.
And I don't know what that is. I feel it's interesting because I feel like I talk so much that I feel like I've been a part of your podcast because you talk about the interviews and all those things. But it has not been been an adequate excuse for me not to dive in. So I finished a book and maybe I'll reference that book a little bit in the current death that you asked me to talk about as well. And I'll maybe just share a few thoughts while you're asking me to pause. So a few of the thoughts that came up as you were opening beyond, yes, I will be listening to other podcasts beyond the one that you and I do here today of yours. And I did dive in and start listening to the one you did with Kaylor yesterday. So and it is different. It is different to engage listening as, a listener than your husband. So anyway, I'm excited to be here and thanks for having me. So when you were opening, and we talked about this an hour ago, and death is such a powerful word. But one of the things that came to mind for me that I think in the context of our relationship, or maybe all relationships, but specifically ours. And it's interesting because it's causing me to think beyond just our relationship. But one of the things when I think of when you said till death do us part and sort of that conventional marriage vow, the thing that's maybe I haven't felt the weight of that. Like it hasn't felt like we need to commit to this relationship until one of us dies as sort of the anchor, and maybe that is what that vow is sort of meant. But I think in a bigger context in that I feel because of my spiritual nature and beliefs, which is one of the things you and I both share, I feel like this relationship is just a part, not to say a small part, a huge part in this lifetime, of course, of our experience and opportunity and learning and connection and love and experiencing that together, this lifetime together. But I view it as a part of a much bigger relationship and container of that survives this death, this physical death in this lifetime. And I view it as something that existed before this, this lifetime as well. So, and I know you and I have done different things that have kind of maybe helped validate that, as much as you can in this lifetime with sort of guided journeys and learning about what felt like an inner knowing of, oh, we've kind of been in this relationship before in a greater context than just this marriage. So to me, when I zoom out like that, it feels like a greater level of adhesiveness to this choice to be in this relationship. Because when I think of it as a spiritual context, that web is much greater when I think we just think of it from a physical context and then even narrowing into like a marriage context is like, oh, I'm only in this marriage until one of us dies. And I'm going to either enjoy the heck out of that, and it'll be very sad when one of us dies, even though we're dying together at the same time, not in an orchestra, not,
well, not like Romeo and Juliet.
No, not in, I don't know why Thelma and Louise came to mind, or not in like a dramatic negative way, but like what's, very tenured and aged in our beds, holding our hands together, deciding to shed the robe, you know, right?
So poetic.
Right. So I thought I'd just start there, and then I could continue on to the kind of the current death that I'm experiencing. Or do you want to add some comments to that?
I think I need to add some comments to that first, because you really, in such a beautiful way, you launched like head first, as you do, into the soul contract, which I was like, let's get there. But not like right off the bat. This is what I love about John, is that you have no problem like instantly creating depth and getting right to the good shit. So thank you for that. But you know, there's probably a lot of people listening going, I have maybe no idea what John's talking about. What do you mean that we've spent lifetimes together upon lifetimes together? And I think just maybe for a little bit of quick context around that, is, you know, sometimes you have these relationships and you meet somebody for the first time and you instantly feel like you know them, right? So that can either be a good thing or a bad thing, for the record. You either instantly meet somebody and it's like, oh my God, you know, like, are you sure we haven't met before? Like, I just feel, you feel familiar. Your face looks familiar. Your voice sounds familiar. Your energy feels familiar. And even though, I mean, you could rack your brain for hours, both of you, and you just recognize, no, in fact, in this lifetime, for sure, we're meeting for the first time. Or the opposite can be true. You meet somebody for the first time and there's just this instant distaste for the other person. And yeah, I've had that before too. And in my head, I'm like, good God, Mandy, like, be kind, give your head a shake, give this person a chance. Why do you feel that way? But we always said that there's something in me that just feels drawn to or repulsed by whoever this person is. And I mean, obviously, you know, if you're listening to this podcast as well, and maybe I'll just start there, that this is why this podcast is called Waking Up Human, is that I genuinely believe that we are spiritual beings who are having a human experience. And so the spiritual part of us knows and recognizes these bonds and connections. It's the human part of us that has to somehow figure it all out, right? Why do I feel this way? Why am I doing these things? And that is just one of the journeys that John and I have very consciously chosen to take together in this life. It's like, what is the purpose of this bond? Why did we feel so attracted to each other off the bat? And by attracted, I don't just mean physically attracted. I mean,
yeah, you do.
Yeah, I do. Okay, fine. Well, man, if you saw pictures of us back in the late 90s, John's pleated khaki pants and my kilt. For the record, I worked at a whatever that cocktail club was, and I was forced to wear a kilt. But I digress. Where was I? I just totally, for a second, John and I were smiling at each other. You can't see this, but I do still get lost in his eyes. He's so cute. Do you feel like a third wheel listening to this podcast right now? We're on a date. You know, all of those things aside, I think the point that I am trying to make is that I was drawn to John. He was drawn to me in the same way. We're not unique. This isn't just us. You are constantly connected and being connected to other souls on this journey who are here to help you and to teach you a lesson. And that's one of the things that we have realized for each other. So, you know, in an interesting way, you know, back to the title of this podcast, Till Death Do Us Part, when we take these vows, or maybe not even formally take the vows, it's just something that is projected or impressed upon us because, you know, society or our family or the way that we were raised, is that it can have this tendency to just really quickly almost like pull us down into this third dimensional, heavy human vow, human bond, almost like signing an agreement that does not create a lot of space for spiritual growth or personal evolution. And the irony in all of that is that we have all come here to grow and to evolve. Now, we've come here to grow and evolve physically, right? You do not have the same body that you had. I'll bring this back to John and I. I do not look the same as I did 25 years ago when he first met me. And so if we just look through this, through the physical lens, pardon me, till death do us part, well, is it death of my physical body? And I know that this just seems very frivolous to bring this up in a way, but the reality is, and maybe you're one of these people, this isn't shallow. This is just the reality of being human when we are so attached to the physical, that that person who you fell in love with, who was 20 years old or 25 years old, who's now 50 or 60 or 70, and you're looking at them going like, ooh, you know, I don't have the same connection to you anymore. I do not mean that in a bad way whatsoever. But if just physically they have totally changed, and we struggle with that, right? So when we're saying till death do us part, is it death of the body? Now, do we have conditions on the body, right? Or is it death of the mind? The mind is also another aspect of being human. And that mind is the part of us where we hold thoughts, beliefs, judgments, right? Preferences, behaviors. And so again, when we meet somebody for the first time and we begin to bond with that person, is that we actually bond over our mental likeness, our mental connection. And maybe we at one point in time shared the same beliefs, we shared the same perspectives. But again, everything is up for negotiation, as it should, because we're here to evolve. And so now all of a sudden, you know, 10 years later, 20, 30 years later, you no longer hold the same set of beliefs, because in one partner, those beliefs have died. And so now is the whole relationship on the table, because till death do us part. Well, now there's been this huge formal death and we're having a hard time connecting. Does this make sense now as to why I wanted to talk about this? So there are constant deaths, and we can talk later about spiritual deaths, but I want to flip this back to John right now, because John is going through a death of sorts right now, or has just gone through a death and is now going through a rebirth of sorts. And it's not unfamiliar to us, because you've been through one of these types of deaths before. And I'm just going to let him speak a little bit to that to give you guys a bit of context. And then I want to kind of riff with John a bit on how we've navigated that, because it's not been the easiest thing, not the, maybe the first evolution or revolution of this, but I think we're doing a lot better this time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. I'm glad to hear you say that, that it feels,
I think we're winning.
It feels better this time. So I'll add a little context to the word death, because you used a rather, you know, heavy word when we think of it in the human context. And I don't know that we really talked about that yet here, which is, so a death of, to me, when we talk about a death, it would be a death of a belief, or a death of a role that we play, or the death of a current way of being, like a role, a pattern that we've had in our own life. And then obviously when we're playing out that role, that is such a human thing to relate to each other and understand each other. Our mind watches the role the other person plays to understand it, so we can best see in that tribal instinct to how to navigate and be around that person. And there ends up being a collaboration is the wrong word, but you calibrate to the other person's current way. And then, as you were saying, Mandy, when that other person goes through a massive change or a substantial death of a belief or a role or a way of being, it creates disorder because the other person's calibration needs to change potentially, and not doesn't need to, but there's a forced evolution that's required, because that the way those two ways intersect is now going to change. So I'll kind of open up on that a little bit too. And I'm laughing in the back of my mind, but I'll laugh out loud as I tell the story too, because I think the word for me before was epiphanies. And I would always have, I don't know really why my life journey has been so full of them. And I had a former business partner who's a really good friend kind of just slow me down once. And he's like, could you stop? Because I looked up the definition of epiphany, and it's like a once in a lifetime thing. You can't have an epiphany every week or every month. So I thank Darren for that, because it was hilarious, because now we use other words like
death or personal growth or, you know, a journey to authenticity, all of which I think he would love to slap me if he heard me say. But I just think that's always been my self-orientation is growing through learning a change of these new ways and change of these behaviors. And so for today's context of a death of a way, I'll kind of zoom right into the current one, and then maybe we'll go back to some of the previous ones. And yeah, so, you know, a career change again, for me, which seems to mark, you know, I guess, fortunately, I would say the bigger inflection points in our life have been around my career changes, right? Fortunately, you know, our marriage has stayed together. You know, we haven't experienced a lot of loss of close people to us, you know, family members. Those other big life events, I think, have always been, you know, fairly stable for us. We haven't, you know, moved necessarily other than our journey to Bali for a year, which was amazing, but also temporary of like an experience and then coming back. So anyway, just to give that context, I feel like a lot of my journey and deaths have been around career. And, you know, to kind of hint back to maybe a broader context of this is that's been a huge part of our relationship, because a huge part of my current way of being had always been in searching around, am I doing the right thing? Like, am I in the right career? Am I serving in the greatest way? And although I've had a lot of great experiences and successes in these two big previous career adventures, I didn't necessarily feel like I got the fit totally right for where I was at that time. So I'm having an experience in this current death of reevaluating that, of going like, maybe it's due to my age and, you know, being mid-40s and kind of going from a career perspective, like, I don't really want to continue learning in that way and searching in that way. I really would like to have the most full experience of who I truly am at this moment being delivered through a career in the highest capacity. And so I think I'm really honing in on that, which is really cool. So maybe to give a few of the elements that we can unpack together. And if you didn't guess from the language I'm using, that is coaching and consulting. So every time I hear the word unpack, I'm like, oh, there's a consultant. Like, that's, you know, stop it. So, transitioning from that more corporate role, the deaths that I see in myself in this transition has been, number one, realizing that I have what just recently came out of a book called The Striver's Curse. The book is not The Striver's Curse, but the belief or the behavior in the book outlines something that I related to as the Striver's Curse. And the book is From Strength to Strength by Arthur C. Brooks, if you've read it or are interested in it. It's a really good book around midlife transitions, I would say, more than anything. But that Striver's Curse being such a heavy subconscious lens of mine, that really was that driving force behind, am I doing enough with my career, where it was about external validation, where even though mentally I had done a lot of work on getting more clear on who I am and what I have to offer, and I could really tell myself a good story, there was still a back end engine in my subconscious going, if I just do this well enough, you know, then yeah, you can dress it up with all the, I'll provide for my family and we'll have nice things and we can go on trips and all those good things. But really the driver behind it was, then I'll be seen and I'll be appreciated, you know, as having done enough if I strive to be the greatest or the most impactful. And there's a lot of nuance there, because I don't throw that whole thing out with that. Now it's so the death of that belief of, oh, I have to do this in a big enough way to be recognized. It just became aware to me that, you know, and that's the gift, is doing enough work and having a great, you know, relationships with friends and your partner to be able to go deep enough to see these things that are driving you. And when I realized and really owned that, and I said, yeah, I think that's still a pretty big role. So if I'm not going to be driven by that, what is the new way? You know, what is the way that I come into the relationship with my career if I get past the striver's curse of it has to be something for external validation. What are those things I base it on then? And I'm starting to explore that. And I'd like to talk about something that is also shared in the book, as you and I talked about, Mandy, and we'll probably go back and forth on a few of these other previous experiences. It's when you enter into the new equation where that one person is making a major change and you've decided you're going to move forward from a deeper or more knowing space, they call that the liminal space. The liminal space is that period of time where you go into the edge of the unknown. And, you know, if you looked up the word liminal, I haven't yet, but I'm sure that's kind of what that means. And you're on the edge, I think, of limit or liminal, right? And that's the area that can cause a lot of havoc because it's unfamiliar. And our tendency in bringing that back to relationship is one with yourself. You feel like perhaps if you don't have the knowledge that you've entered into a new space and what the characteristics of that space are, which is discomfort, which is uneasiness in relationships, because there's a searching to put ourselves back into what's known and what's familiar, that when you're in that liminal space to understand that it's okay to feel a lot of the things that come up when you're there. And it can be the space where we get really thrown off track, as you and I've experienced in some of the previous adventures into that space, because it's like, oh, this must be wrong because it feels really uncomfortable and unknown. So I'll kind of pause there because I'm sure that's drummed up some more thoughts for you to kind of tie it in and see where you want to go from here.
Because I just had an epiphany. No, I honestly did. So the first 15 years of our life together is that John was an entrepreneur, right? And so he had mentioned his previous business partner, who's still a dear friend. Him and his wife are still dear friends of ours. And they were 50-50 business partners. And John had decided, you know, that he didn't want to be a part of that business anymore. There was something, not that the business was not doing well, like, you know, talk about having a money tree in the backyard, no word of a lie. But John was feeling something deeper inside of himself. And, you know, we talk a lot about, or I talk a lot about, what are all of these different needs that we have, not just like these physical needs as humans, but also these bigger spiritual needs. And I mean, it's just this whole thing. But, you know, it just came to me is your need for significance. So Tony Robbins uses the word significance as one of the bigger drivers that we have as, I'll say, the emotional aspect. What drives, it's kind of like this beautiful bridge between our humanness and our spiritualness. And significance, when we really are dialed in to significance, it's actually spiritual significance. It's that my soul comes here to have really the experience of heaven on earth. This is just what the epiphany that I'm having right now. And so when you, John, sold your part of the business to your business partner, and you were stepping into that liminal edge, or whatever you want to call it, into the unknown, you did not know what you wanted to do from there. But whether you admitted it or not, or were aware of it or not, you were actually seeking greater significance. You want to make a bigger impact. And actually, it was not for, what were you saying on this? What's that driver thing? The striver's curse, not necessarily for external validation. This was something that was so inherent within you that was one of the things that attracted me to you from the first time that I met you, is that you were always seeking, like, how can I make the biggest impact? How can I share the most amount of love? How can I be of the greatest amount of service? And so when you left, when you sold that business seeking significance, and you immediately fell into this void where all of these other relationships, you know, friends that you had had in your life, like lots of different entrepreneurial friends through the organization you were a part of, your business partner, your customers, on and on. It was like overnight, they weren't calling you anymore because they had no idea how to relate to you. This is that till death do us part. There was an overnight parting of ways because people did not know how to relate to you. So it threw you very quickly into a downward spiral, because he hadn't yet caught the next wave of significance, but anything that provided some sense of significance behind you was now gone. And you were looking to me for that. And I was running my own business, busy with three kids, and also just not really a fan of watching you spiral. And I didn't want to go down the well with you in that way. And we very shortly thereafter, just a few months later, we took our kids to Bali for a year. That was already set up, by the way. And it was as beautiful as it was and such an incredible experience. It also completely flipped you and your mental health and your physical health and everything completely upside down. Because here you are now, like in the middle of the jungle with anybody and everybody who loved you the most on the whole planet, being me and the kids. And you are the farthest that I've ever seen you from happy in your whole life. And the epiphany that I just had was, you actually left, like, this is just kind of blowing my mind right now. You left for significance, and now we've taken you so far away from anything that could potentially bring that to you in a way where you could, you know, create input to then have that feedback loop. Right?
Yeah. And I kind of just sort of grab the floor and glad that you see it that way. And I guess I hadn't thought of it specifically that way, but it all makes sense to me now, because my experience at that time, I love how you situate it. And I'll just recap it again, because I want it to land for me, and
land for the audience, depending on where what they're going through or will be going through at some point or had gone through.
I'll scale it back to that drive for significance. I'm glad you were attracted to it, because, you know, there's a healthy part of the striver, right? Like somebody who wants to accomplish something, and all those nice words that you said of like, accomplish something good in this world. You're going to laugh. I don't even know, but I'm just going to go with this. In our minds, we often get so linear with our thoughts of, is John saying striver is good or bad, right? Like, we want to categorize it as good or bad, right? Typically it's like, oh, and when I called it the striver's curse, it's like, oh, that must be bad, because curse is, you know, considered a bad word. I wanted, for the context of what I'm going to share on this in the next little bit, I want us to not judge this striver's curse as good or bad. It's like anything, it has both, right? And so just to bring it to the example we're sharing, where I now know that came from is, as a young child, my abilities and skills were not the ones that were seen as valuable in my family or even in school or in society. Some of the things were, and we learned this about ourselves. So I was good at sports. So it was like, okay, I better put the striving on in the sports side to be accepted and loved and all those things, right? All of us do that in some way. But what I now know is, actually louder qualities inside me of who I was as a person were actually seen as weaknesses at that time, being very empathetic, being very emotional, being very, you know, yeah, those things and all the things in that. And anybody who's like the astrology people, I have Cancer in so many of my astrological chart, which is like, if you read some, it's like, you're an emotional wreck, don't leave the house, you know? So fast forward to, I had lived all of my life up until that point, which was early 30s, I think, at that point, striving in the ways that I thought would be bring love and acceptance in society, which is, being an entrepreneur seemed cool. People like that. Society celebrates that, running a successful business and making financial abundant
family. And so I, to your point, man,
had a point in my life where the inner knowing, the inner part of me that wanted to be experienced, that wanted to have more of the stage, wasn't able to see it through in that venue anymore. I couldn't figure out how to do it in that relationship anymore, in that John is this role. And sometimes people can figure it out within their role, and they don't have to change everything back to relationships and the death of a belief or a death of a relationship. For me, it was, I needed that way. I needed to shed that way of being by leaving that situation. I needed it to be drastic enough so that that whole equation, as I view it, the energy bubble of how people related to me needed to change because I wanted it to change. My soul wanted it to change, which was, I'm going to now come back around with a different version of myself, and we're going to be learn how to be in relationship in a different way. And you and I had to go through head
two. And back to that example,
as I was changing everything, and then we ended up being quite isolated, which was actually such a gift. What would have happened and still kind of happened when we came back, being in the jungle away from everything, didn't, and you saw me do it. I tried to plug the old way of me back in into certain circumstances.
Like, oh, let's start this business here. Oh, I met these interesting people. Maybe this is the thing I'm supposed to do. And it was such...
But admit it, you still want the ski lodge in Japan.
Yes.
Still want the ski lodge in Japan.
And actually that wouldn't have solved.
It wouldn't have.
Right. Because it's not, even though I love that, that totally fills the passion bubble. Mm-hmm. It is not a deep enough representation of what I'm truly gifted at now, which I'm giving myself finally permission to do,
yeah.
Right? Which really leveraged those qualities that we talked about on the emotional side. So, yeah. So when we were totally isolated, I view that as such a gift because there, I couldn't just reach back out and find that rope. And I didn't, now we have context to know that that's kind of what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, think of when I zoom back out where we started, which you said is where you wanted to end from a spiritual perspective.
Yeah.
I view that as like the universe conspiring in your favor.
Mm-hmm.
John needs to have this experience of being away from everything because mm-hmm. I would have either plugged back in mm-hmm. some other similar way mm-hmm. to what I was doing before because mm-hmm. that pull was so strong. And as we'll probably talk about, the next lap around on that was similar, but different. And yeah. there's just an evolution and growth through each one.
Yeah. But so here's,
I'm going to try to find words. This is like, this is the experience that I wanted to give everybody like real time. This is honest to God how John and I chat with each other every single day. So I feel very, very grateful for that. But I'm also trying to, I'm thinking, I'm feeling, and I'm trying to formulate words at the same time. Because when we came back from Bali, and you know, there's a whole longer story in that. This is when we built out my meditation center. As some of you might not know, I had opened a meditation center known as Lifestyle Meditation here in Edmonton, which was, and I always say this, and I don't say this for any type of recognition. It was the first mainstream meditation center in Canada. I say that because, and we always joke, John and I, we were on the leading bleeding edge of something new. And so with that came, you know, for both of us, like, yeah, this is amazing. You know, we can provide this beautiful place for people, you know, to connect and to find peace and to work some of their stress out and that. But there was also, when I say it was the bleeding edge, and I tell you, this is the first, anytime something is the first, there's the majority of people don't really understand it. They don't trust it. There's a lot of judgment around a lot of things. And so John and I were both navigating that together. But again, we are two individuals inside of one relationship. But there's one individual is John, who is coming full board into the helping of the construction of this studio, trying to fulfill his own needs for significance, and me trying to do mine. And the way that both of us were trying to attempt this is different because we are different people. And so what ended up happening is that there was, you know, friction and conflicting ideas around how it was going to happen. And well, let's just say that John is a lot smarter than I am and realized that, no, it's either my marriage or it's it's this center. And Mandy, I love you enough to like step back out now to let you do your thing and to seek significance and impact in your own way. And you went and did that in your own way. And it was then that you went and joined a really, really big general contractor. And very quickly, what is the role or the position that I can jump into where I can have the most significance within this company? Right?
Yeah, it was when I when I think about it and saying that it was another lap, where if I had to put percentages on it, the drive, the striver's curse, as we've been talking about, the drive for significance was still the greater force. Like, it was probably still 51% of why I made that decision, but I had become much more clear on the authentic part of me that I was learning about, that I wanted to be able to share and put so much time and effort into, and in a work environment. Whereas a lot of us, for a good example, would be, you know, when you stay in a career and you're totally driven by significance, and when that can really be unfulfilling, is when very little of the authentic part of you, of what your natural gifts and calling are, you know, of what are not being utilized, but you're in a role that is significant and or externally validated by financial success and or other people.
Yeah. And I think it's the validation piece. And that's what I had experienced, you know, many times earlier in my career as a personal trainer and as an athletic trainer, is that I was very, very good at what I did. And there's a lot of people like, oh, thank God you're here, Mandy, you know, and we need you to do this and that, and you're so great and you can never leave. And yeah, so that's where I think this whole idea of significance, where it's coming from external validation, because how do we know we're significant? There's some sense of validation with that, right? So it's either coming externally or it's coming internally. And I think where the magic happens, and where I'm saying this, is this beautiful bridge between the human fulfillment and the spiritual fulfillment, is when it's both. It's when we feel internally validated and when we feel externally validated, right? And so I needed to leave doing what I was doing, even though everybody's like, you're great, you're wonderful, we love what you're doing, don't ever stop. I was getting the external validation, but not the internal. And interestingly enough, I think that's exactly what was happening for you.
Yeah. And I'm interested in leaning more to the edge of it being almost much more important for the internal validation than the external.
However, because we're using the context of career or work, it needs to be externally validated to get paid for it. So when I think the danger would be casting that across all things in life. But like I said, I'll repeat it, because we're talking about my experience of wanting to show up fully, more my authentic self in a career scenario. And you said that yourself as well, that it does need to be externally validated, because somebody else has to see value in it to want to exchange, either pay you for it or hire you for it. So yeah, it's not my tendency to answer that question when you say, oh, it also needs to be externally validated, with my current state, because I'm trying to heal that need for constant external validation by saying, no, I don't need any. But we know that's a fundamental human need too. And we also know that if we're talking about it in relationship to work, it needs some level of external validation.
Well, yes. And I don't necessarily just mean external validation in terms of a specific person, like patting you on the back, but there needs to be some sort of external feedback that you're on the right track, that there's alignment, right? And, you know, everything that we're setting up here with respect to our work that we do in the world and experiencing, you know, fulfillment and all those things, I want to shift that over, because I think it's exactly, I mean, it might look differently, but I think it's exactly the same thing within our relationships, our key relationships. Because if we are so disconnected or void of self-fulfillment, and we're constantly seeking I feel like I'm using the word validation too much, but the approval, I'll shift. And then I'll get a thesaurus when I flip it back over to John. When we are seeking the approval of our partner, is that is, I believe, is one of the things that becomes extremely exhausting, because now you're not living for self. In fact, you know, it was something that you had said quite a bit earlier too, John, just around stifling our growth, where we grow to these edges, these liminal edges, but we realize that it feels so uncomfortable that it's like, you know what, I would rather be comfortable in the unfulfillment and the discomfort. I'd rather be comfortable in the discomfort than uncomfortable, like out on the edge, right? And I think that this becomes a really slippery slope that we walk within relationships, where a lot of people that I know are like, well, screw that. If I can't grow here and if I can't put myself out there and I can't change and evolve, then clearly I just need to leave the relationship, or I need to do this without the help or support of any of my friends. And it's almost like, and we've all seen it, and maybe on some level, we've all done this before, where when you really feel this massive urge to launch forward, to change, to shift, to grow, to evolve, but you really don't want to hear anybody's feedback on that because you don't want to have to renegotiate all these relationships. I watch a human tendency is to just start to snip and clear away all of these connections, because it's like, I don't even want people to disapprove of what I'm doing. And when I say people, like, I'm one of those people. Like, that has been something huge for me that I've really had to look at and to work on in my life. And it's actually been one of the greatest gifts, but the freaking hardest things in our marriage, and in, for me anyway, in our relationship, is that I don't like being challenged. I don't like this constant calibration along the way because it's uncomfortable. So I would rather just, you know, work behind the scenes. If I get an idea for something, or, you know, whatever I want to do, I would rather work and grind it out by myself alone forever and ever and ever until hopefully some sort of result shows up. And then I can flip around to John and say, see, look what I did. Right. And wait now for his validation and for his approval. And sometimes it's not what I'm hoping for it to be. And then I go around and I get angry because I'm like, you don't even know how hard and how long I've worked at this. And the truth is that he didn't know because I didn't let him see it and I didn't let him into the process. And so over the last how many ever years where I've welcomed him into the process, I realized that, not that he's playing devil's advocate, but he's actually the person who loves me the most, who gives me the most constructive feedback, that half of the time, even though if I don't love it, I'm like, you're right. Thank you for that. Again, he represents this external validation. That's like, maybe I thought this was a good idea, but thank you for sharing that with me, because in practice it isn't. The other half of the time, or maybe like 90% of the time, it actually just validates for me inside of myself. I say, thank you for the feedback, but I don't agree with you. And he was that beautiful kind of loving hand that I could push up against, to realize this actually means so much to me that I'm going to go for it anyway, right? So we can use our relationship as the container to try those things on. And this is kind of what I'm talking about, John, about the internal, the external, and where the real magic happens between you and I is when we both feel so internally validated by the paths that we're on as individuals, but then it works within the context of our relationship. And there's that external validation that for me, what's working for me is also what's working for us. That is, I think, where the real magic happens.
Yeah. And I couldn't agree more with most of your last sentence. And the reason I say most was, I think we've both had to be willing to risk things that don't necessarily work on the outer layers to allow each other to have the inner experience that we needed, that was more important than something that causes discomfort in the outer layers. And what I mean by that, and you know this, Mandy, but, and a lot of maybe your audience has heard you and I talk about this before, but I want to go there right now, which is why I feel so fortunate about our relationship, is at the very core, we feel that this relationship is a spiritual relationship of which we are in each other's web of souls, you know, that has reoccurred in many different roles, in many different ways, in many different lifetimes. And we've chosen this relationship to learn as much as we possibly can about ourselves in the relationship. So having that fundamental shared spiritual value, I think, is extremely high value for the continuity and the stick-to-itiveness of this relationship, where it's like, even death isn't an escape. That sounded so bad.
I will haunt you forever.
That's what you say. So it's like, well, better use this container as effectively as possible. And what did I say? I oversay container. I don't think I've been doing it today. I call it a spaceship now. So we're going to overuse this spaceship, this marriage ship. So number one, we have that shared value, which is, I think, really cool. And then secondary, when I said the outer rings of this, the second ring that we put in the relationship is that we're here to help each other, like you just said, experience what we need to experience as a soul, you know, and grow through. And I know we've had many different challenges. I know for me, to give the listeners an example, was when I was jumped into your business, I was had my own thing, that striving of I wanted to make your meditation business like North America wide in like a year or two. And that was being driven by my need for external validation on that striving side. I didn't realize it at the time. I thought, that's wonderful. I have all these skills. I should help Mandy grow her business because she wants to do so much good impact, that why wouldn't we do that? But then we realized at some point, I realized that was your first foray as an entrepreneur and you growing at a pace that was appropriate for you and for the business. I, as the husband, was trying to jump in, and as the more seasoned entrepreneur, jump in and save you all these lessons. And maybe if you had let me, but we wouldn't, I know now we wouldn't have been in a better spot, but let's just say financially and growth wise, we actually went down the road that my striver was trying to accomplish. And let's say it was bigger and more financially rewarding and all these things, but you never had the opportunity to grow the way that you needed to grow in that business. And I remember that at the time where I was like, no. Okay. Maybe somebody pointed it out where I was like, okay, I can see that now. Like, why would I spare Mandy her growth for these things that I want, right? External validation, bigger business. I always had talked about a business as a force for good. It was like my exploration of how can I have the authentic John be in business in a different way instead of just selling a product or a service that didn't feel connected to my authentic self. So I feel grateful that I recognize that in the moment. And when I long way to get to my point on the outer rings, is the outer rings is where I think a lot of people spend most of their relationship time. And because you and I have those inner two rings, we'll make decisions related to those that maybe compromise the outer ring, which is security. It's things that are fundamental to like the physical part of our human selves, of like, you know, the meat suit part of ourselves, the reptilian part of ourselves, which is like safety, security, food, shelter, parenting, all the things that it takes to run a household and a life together. And all those are very important, and they do take a lot of, that's probably a whole other podcast on like, you know, even the physical attraction that's kind of lives in that ring too. I think it's one layer inside that ring, you know, of being able to, why would you want to have like a marriage and intimate partnership? Well, that physical attraction, at least for us, is an important part of that as well. It led to kids in our relationship.
Leads to, you know, some other good things. So, but anyway, I just want to I want to loop it there where a good example right now, and I'll bring it up to something.
Love your perspective on this. I feel like
podcast. That's fun. I'll pay for that later. Is remember this summer when, you know, let's go back to that recalibration. We had started talking about me leaving where I was, mm-hmm. and starting to explore what it was I wanted to go do. And as I was stretching into that new space for me, I was like, maybe it doesn't have to look like the way, like this business corporate thing. That was my way of exploring, like, could I give myself permission to be more my authentic self and shed even another layer of expectation or striver or what was celebrated? And I remember my soul feeling so excited of like, just see what it feels like to shed that expectation. And I shared that with you, and it pushed your outer ring into mm-hmm. discomfort mm-hmm. because you're quickly like, well, but you're really relevant there. And that's where you get paid. Like, yeah. Do your thing, but do it in the business arena. Cause people, and you're not wrong with that. Mm-hmm. But once again, it's those circles of like expectation of those outer rings where you're like, what if John isn't making the money mm-hmm. he makes now while he's figuring this out? That puts us into discomfort mm-hmm. and recalibration. But I'd like to hear for you now, like, as we step a ring or two in, mm-hmm. which is like, how was that experience been for you as we, you know, as you see me sort of navigate from more like, what does my authentic self want to experience with this? And I'm not chasing the dollars like I once did. And I'm mm-hmm. giving myself more time and more patience. And fortunately, we have the means right now where it's not paycheck to paycheck. But if it got to that place where we were stressed around bills and things, that would be a very interesting time. Mm-hmm. And so I'll just maybe turn it back to you.
Yeah. Can you tell we're just sharing the microphone right now back and forth? We share everything over here. Oh, well, you know, it just shows you how strong these neural pathways are, these old experiences that just keep formulating these different beliefs and these emotions. Because when John first, you know, kind of came to me in the summer saying, yeah, so I'm thinking about leaving, you know, this company then that he's been at for the last 6 years. And he's like, I want to go out on my own and probably some consulting or some coaching or something like that. I'm not really sure what yet. The bigger part of me, of course, was celebrating that. I'm like, yes, thank God, finally. Like, this has been like a beautiful evolution and a step and a step and a step. But there was still a part of me that was terrified. And that was the part of me that really needed some attention. And I knew in the beginning, I'm like, I don't like how she's feeling. Like, just shut her up, shut her up, shut her up. Let's keep her distracted, right? But then finally, John kind of came to me one day, and it was, I mean, maybe came softly and gently, but it ended up being something that was quite loud. And there was some huge tears that I'd been holding back for a long time. I think actually, to be completely honest, holding back since the time you sold your business, like I've been holding those back for 6 or 7 years. Because of the state or the condition you were in when you first sold your business, and then watching you for that year in Bali and then kind of sorting it out, where, you know, he's on the bedroom floor, you know, crying and upset, not really knowing what to do. And at the same time, I had 3 other kids and another one who was struggling desperately with her own anxiety disorder. And I couldn't fall apart. It didn't feel safe for me to say anything. But this time, and it actually makes me want to cry right now, is that I did fall apart. And I think the only reason that I did fall apart was despite that aspect of me that was afraid of repeating history, is that I finally understood that it was going to be different this next go around. I didn't have to be the one who had to mentally, emotionally, you know, even physically, in a sense, hold us together, not just as a family, but as a couple. And that I could allow you to do that. There was an emerging sense of deeper trust and deeper knowing, but that did not disqualify the fearful part of me from needing to be heard for what her concerns were. And, you know, I thank you for the way that you showed up with so much grace in that dialogue and in that conversation. And you weren't just telling me things that I needed to hear to, you know, validate you. You weren't just saying like, you know, you need to trust me this time and I've got this. The things that you said, and I don't remember what you said that day, but you're kind of like, based on how you've watched me the last 5 years, you know, does it look like I'm the same person that I was 5 or 6 years ago? Have I grown? Have I acquired a new sense of confidence? Do I have new sets of skills? Do I have all these connections? And it was like, yeah, thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you for showing me all of that. And then you're just grabbing me by my hands and looking me in the eyes. And you're like, I'll tell you something now that I couldn't last time, but I've got us. And I actually felt that. And like, these tears are just tears of relief, because I know that there's a lot of people who are listening to this that, you know, in our relationship, is that what can often happen is that we create these codependencies where, you know, one person just feels the safety to just constantly fall apart and figure themselves out. And then the other one just kind of feels like they have to be the leaning post. And I don't regret anything. And it doesn't mean that in, you know, the previous 15 years, it doesn't mean that you were never one that I leaned on. You're my person. But I think I really just took on the job of leaning post, and I didn't know what it would feel like to be able to step back. In fact, if anything, I was so terrified that if I did, that you wouldn't be here anymore.
That's such a powerful statement. It's almost like, I don't know what to do with it. Because I was immediately going to go into some sort of lighthearted response, but I see what that meant to you. And what I was thinking as you were talking about, and I remembered that conversation, and I know this will be hopefully a very great value to everybody, is in this circumstance, Mandy's giving me a lot of the credit of how I've managed, where you said gracefully, and you know, how I've managed this change and getting to a point where I could give you enough safety that you could feel like you didn't have to hold it all together. But you also were making that shift for yourself as well. And before I got to the point, and this is why I view it as such a beautiful equation of like recalibration, not as linear. It's like, I wish this podcast was visual, because you know how much I talk with my hands. It's like, everything's
why you keep knocking the microphone.
Yeah, everything's two bubbles these days, you know. But our equations were recalibrating and recalculating, where you for sure will remember the couples workshop that you and I attended, where with the support of others and coaches, even before maybe I felt ready in this change, they helped you give yourself permission to fall apart. And that I might have been ready to support you at any point, even in those times where you felt like I can't fall apart because John doesn't know where he is or what he wants to do, and so I got to hold this whole thing together, right? Before I was ready, when they gave you, those coaches gave you permission to fall apart, and you were able to declare what you needed, there was a huge dormant part in me that has always been ready to provide that, right? No matter what it externally looked like, as far as like the big priorities that we thought needed to be in place, right? Like, oh, okay, John needs to be in better mental health with what he's doing career-wise before you could let out your rope a little bit. And so I don't know, that's just really interesting, like learning for both of us. And for those that are listening, I hope that if you feel like you're in one of those two archetypes, either the person that's like holding everything together right now, or the person that feels like they're falling apart right now, that whoever you're in relationship with, there's probably a lot of threads in between those two polarities, where the greatest gift is both people being willing to do the work and look introspectively on why you might be holding on to that position and why they might be holding on to their position. And it's impossible to figure it out for the other. We can do it in concert with one another, which I think you and I have had the experience of doing, and it's never at the same pace and it never looks the same way. But when both people are invested in that, and that's where I lean back to loving somebody, is the grace of giving them the space to do that at the pace that they need to, and knowing that you have an impact on it, but you're not responsible for it. You can only be accountable and responsible to what you're doing for yourself. And when we do that authentically and courageously, it often gives the other person the permission to do the same. But if we hold judgment that it needs to look like the way we're doing it, there could be further stress and conflict. So I don't know. I think that's a really beautiful sharing on that experience we've had. And thank you for sharing how that's felt for you.
Thank you. Thank you for listening. And, you know, as I'm hearing you kind of say that, you know, whether in directing it out to, you know, to those that are listening, whether, you know, you're the leaning post or you're the one who's doing the leaning, is I think ultimately the beauty, I don't want to say the goal, But when we arrive in the beauty of really what these relationships are for, is that it's for the dance. And now I'm going to cry again.
Wedding song. No.
It's for the dance of that. Like, to me, that is what a spiritual relationship is. Is it's that we get to take turns. It's not like, okay, thank God I've been doing this for the last 20 years. Now it's your turn for 20 years. Is it can be on a moment by moment basis. And when we become so intimately attuned to the other person, is that you can almost feel where they're at, and then we can adjust accordingly. And where my tears are coming from, and this will kind of be the last part of our story as we then start to come around, you know, third base right now and into the home plate of our podcast together, is I'm going through a massive death. The second time in my life, the first was when I became a mother. And what happens overnight is that the single woman that you are is forever gone. It's that change that you can't pretend, or, you know, you can't go back on, or you can't do half-ass. It's like one day you're a single woman, you know, and then the next day you're a mother, and that doesn't
put it back, change. Put it back.
Trust me. Sometimes put it back in. I'm like, put it back in.
That's the baby, everyone.
Yeah. That's the, put the baby back in. Just to be clear. And over the last month, we have a daughter who's moving to California next week. Oh, I have a son who's graduating from high school in a couple of months. And today I had to buy the graduation tickets, and I had to search for a baby picture to submit. And we have one other son who's in 10th grade, and he still has 2 years left. And yet in the last month, John and I have spent a couple of trips out, and we have a little mini farm that we bought a couple of years ago in the Okanagan that it was our intention to buy this as, like, this is our, I don't want to call it retirement. This is our second half of life property. I can't even look at John right now. Stop looking at me. And the idea is that this is the place that we build for our kids to come back to, and for our grandchildren, and for our friends. And we've been building it and building it, and it's the first time. And we've built a lot of homes, and we've moved a lot, probably like 7 or 8 times with our kids since they were born. But this is the first time that we've done this, the two of us, really without them. They're spare bedrooms, but there's not specifically a bedroom for, if you know what I mean. And our first trip out a few weeks ago, just the two of us. And we were kind of sitting there, and John kept saying, like, why are you so quiet? Why are you so quiet? And I haven't been able to share them. And it just feels like I wasn't ready to be there yet. And yet, here I fucking am. You know, and it's not, I was going to say it's not sad. The truth is that it is sad. I'm holding a lot of truths at the same time. I'm holding sadness. And I'm holding excitement. And I'm holding deep gratitude that the person that I'm looking at on the other side of the table is somebody that I'm really excited to live the next half of my life with, more concentrated, in a more focused way. And lastly, I'm grateful, and I am in awe of how freaking hard both of us have worked, and how many times we could have called it quits and won, like it almost happened. And now from the outside looking in, people just look at John and I, and they're like, oh my God, you know, you guys have had the perfect marriage, like, for this, all of this time, you have the perfect children. Things are not always what they seem. It comes with a lot of hard work. And not only do I get to look at you in awe of what we've done, so that as we've arrived here, it's like, not only, well, grateful I still like you, but this new rebirth that you're going through with the way that you serve in the world, and I'm going through stuff in and of, you know, my own, is that I feel like in the most beautiful way is that we're starting over. And it's like, I'm excited to get to know you again and to date you and to do all of these beautiful things. And I just really want to share with people who are in whatever version of their relationships are. And just, I just want to be clear. This isn't like a stay in a super toxic relationship and figure it out. But rather, this is the understanding that these relationships that we do enter into are purposeful. And I don't think we're meant to just quit just for the sake of quitting because something is painful or uncomfortable. And at the same time, I don't think that we're meant to grind it out and to not grow and to evolve because we've set a vow and we take that vow very literally and very humanly, like to death do us part. I think it's so much more than all of that. And that we need to keep working and doing what feels validating and fulfilling for ourselves personally. And if as you're doing that for self, you look over and you have somebody else who's maybe they're doing it for themselves, maybe they're not. And it's okay if your partner's not into the big, I want to grow thing, but they still love and respect you for doing your thing. And you doing your thing is still working for your relationship. And that's good too.
Yeah, I was going to say the only thing that's never that linear. But when you said toxic or quitting, is the words that were coming to mind are when that really becomes an option is when one person wants everything to stay the same. Mm-hmm. And I know what's more complicated than that. You know, there's a bazillion different scenarios of how those two people are interacting in a marriage or a relationship. So I don't mean to make it that simple. I just know from our experience in relation to this conversation, you know, we joked with the baby. It's like, put it back. You know, that's kind of an amazing, huge, profound metaphor for life, which is, you know, it's cliche, but it's so, so true. And maybe we can all just look at our lives, step back and observe, because I know I do it every day too. I'm trying to put things back to the way that I was comfortable with, right? And I know there's a lot of people, especially if you listen to this podcast or any podcast, you're trying to learn, you're trying to grow. Mm-hmm. And as Mandy said, it doesn't necessarily mean your partner has to do it the same way, but some acceptance that there is change and there is growth on both parties, I think is completely necessary because, like I said, doesn't have to look the same or be the same, but you know, if we're trying to keep it the same all the time, there's going to be some massive level of stress or strain. And yeah, I thought that was a beautiful way to kind of close that section, Mandy, and thanks for sharing so emotionally. It feels like this is like a co-podcast because I feel like I'm like interviewing you now, but thanks for sharing. That was, you know, the thing that you had mentioned at the beginning that you hadn't really shared with me, I believe, was how you were actually feeling about these decisions around the second half of life together. And yeah, you were quiet when we were away. And I was wondering, you know, and I was okay with the wonder because, you know, like you said, if you were quiet or you were just looking at me, that's that liminal space again, where I think it's a completely fair time to make that reassessment, right? And go, who is this person that I'm heading into this phase of my life with, without the distractions of day-to-day with the kids and all those things. So in your and my typical fashion, I'm glad we're looking ahead on that because as you know, in the next 3 months, we've got more kids activities than you can imagine. So it's not going to feel like, but we're kind of foreseeing the future with some of the decisions we made around the property and the farm and the house and things. So I was excited because you said that you had asked a few people questions about that they wanted to ask me on this podcast.
Yeah, but we're not going into that. People will do some in the show notes. and we're going to do them on social media. You want to answer a question?
Yeah.
No. We're going to do that on social media. Okay. Because I think this just feels like mm-hmm. divine inspiration. This is a beautiful place for us to lead, because it feels like an impactful message, and I don't want to water it down with anything. In fact, I was just scrambling on my phone here while John was finishing off that last beautiful sentiment. And I wanted to read this very short but beautiful poem that came to mind. And it's kind of always, I thought about it several times over the course of our marriage together, and maybe this will strike a chord with all of you. So the poem is by the beautiful Sufi poet Rumi, and it goes like this. Out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, there is a field, and I'll meet you there. When the soul lies down in that grass, the world is too full to talk about it. Ideas, language, and even the phrase each other doesn't make any sense. So when we can come together, and when we can commune together, and really offer the best and most beautiful parts of ourselves. I know I'm speaking for John as well, but both John and I have spent a lot of time really thinking about it, is that we can really just dissolve into one another. And this is where we get to focus on the relationship and what the purpose and the goal is for that relationship. And ultimately, it should be to spread love, to inspire love, to be inspired by love. But as you and I were chatting last night, John, is that we can't build that within the relationship if we don't hold that love for self. And so how do we create space for both, right? And so we start with ourselves, and then we have the intention. How do I share all of the best and most loving and beautiful parts of me with you, and together co-create this relationship? That relationship then becomes the container, if you want to use that word, that our children feed into, that our families, that our friends feed into that as well. And I'm just so deeply grateful to do this with you. So thank you. Thank you for being here. Thank you for being a guest on this podcast. I hope you listen to it. It's one of the ones that you listen to. And I'll just let you share any parting words. But thank you for everybody listening.
Thank you. It felt like it got appropriately so way more serious than than our usual light banter amongst the depth. Yeah, and you're beautiful. Thanks for that poem. Thanks for having me. And I would just add to that beautiful, like, doing that self-work and loving ourselves gives us the ability to hold the space when each other needs to face the vulnerabilities, mm-hmm. right? And there's such a gift in having enough confidence that we can show the vulnerable or weak part of ourselves mm-hmm. in a safe space and still be loved and accepted. Mm-hmm. And I know we do that for each other. And lastly, I will listen to this podcast. And I want a podcast with you all the time, because I feel like this is the venue where I get like all the goods that are in your mind, yeah. which I was so grateful that you shared with me and everybody. Even if we never produce, you know, this to the world, it's been such a valuable conversation just between the two of us. So thanks mm-hmm. for having that and having me here. And I love you.
I love you too. Thank you, everybody, for listening, sending all of you so much love right into your hearts today, and a great big huge hug. And I hope to hear and see from all of you again soon. Take care.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Waking Up Human podcast. If you're looking for additional resources, anything from education on mindfulness, meditation, and just simply how to stress less, to engaging in a community, one where you can show up and be seen and heard and even get the insights from other people, as we all know that feeling like we belong and that we are connected is our one and only primary human need, then I have the place for you. You can join my membership community known as The Practice. And to find out more about this beautiful supportive community that is filled with tools, resources, and all of the support that you need to lead a mentally strong and healthy life, then go to visit www.manditrap.com and learn all about the practice there. Thank you for listening. Don't forget to subscribe and to send this podcast to somebody else who you think could benefit from it. Take care.